You're listening to the Common Fan Podcast, a Husker football podcast for the common fan by the common fan.
Rodgers deep for Nebraska. Here's Wiley's kick. It's high. It holds up there. Rodgers takes the ball at the 30. He's hit and got away. Back upfield to the 35, to the 40. He's to the 45. He's to the 50, to the 45, to the 40, to the 35, to the 20, to the 10. He's all the way home. Holy moly. Man, woman, and child did that. Put him in the aisles. Johnny the Jet Rodgers just tore them loose from their shoes.
Man, woman, and child, common fans, do we have an unbelievable guest for you today. I am TJ Burkle with Matty Owens Sr. and Geoff in Lincoln. We are the Common Fans, and we could not be more excited to have Husker royalty joining us today. You're going to want to sit and listen to this entire episode, and while you're at it, you might as well fire up the grill and cook your favorite meal of choice from certified Piedmontese beef. Whether it's steaks, burgers, ribs, whatever you're looking for, you can find it at your local Mercado Butcher Shop at 30th and Yankee Hill or 84th and Havelock in Lincoln, and also at 162nd and Maple in Omaha. You can also go to cpbeef.com to get certified Piedmontese products shipped right to your front door anywhere in the United States. Certified Piedmontese, powering the Husker football team and powering the Common Fan Podcast. Let's get right to it, Common Fans. Our guest today was the University of Nebraska's first ever Heisman Trophy winner. He is a two-time national champion as a Cornhusker, a two-time All-American. He still holds multiple Nebraska football records, and he is the man about whom Tom Osborne said, "Johnny changed us from a good team to a national championship team." We are, of course, talking about Husker legend Johnny the Jet Rodgers. Johnny, it is a true honor and a privilege to have you joining the Common Fans today.
Thank you, TJ. I sure really appreciate the introduction. But you said I was the first Heisman Trophy winner in Nebraska. I think I still am.
You are forever the first Heisman Trophy winner at Nebraska.
And the first wide receiver, I think, to win the Heisman Trophy.
That's right. That's right. Very impressive. I mean, I feel like we should call you Sir or Your Highness or Mr. Jet, perhaps. I mean, do you have a preferred name that we should call you?
Well, in the Canadian Football League, they just called me Ordinary. I named myself the Ordinary Superstar because I wanted to be like ordinary people. You know, ordinary people can do what I do. Everybody can do it. Why would you think about most of the time? They just have to think on it. And we thought on winning. Winning in Nebraska, I don't want you to think that winning is everything, because winning isn't everything. But in Nebraska, we rated right up there with oxygen. It's pretty darn important, you know?
It is.
Well, and Johnny, speaking of winning, you were telling us before we hit record here, it sounds like you're still quite the competitor. You said something about you and your daughter winning a pickleball championship?
Well, we're in the city pickleball league. We just won the city of Omaha has leagues, and we are in a league, and we won that league just last night. We had some people there that kind of played this kind of tough towards the end there, but I've only been playing since August. I picked it up, and I told my daughter then, I said, well, I don't really understand this, but I think we're going to get this. We'll probably win the whole thing. And he said, no. We can't win the whole thing. I said, I don't know, but I'll probably get it by then. And so, lo and behold, by the time that we got to the playoffs, we won the first city championship, and then we turned around and won another.
Well, I think, you know, I'm not sure what these people are thinking. Like, they think they have a chance against Johnny the Jet, but we're not surprised at all.
No, is anybody surprised?
Not at all.
I have people tell me all the time, they're not going to let no old guy like me beat them, and still I do. I think they think I'm too old, but I'm still got a little pep in my step, a little get up and go. And my daughter plays pretty good too. She's very passionate, and he's a poet, spoken word girl. But he's a former tennis player, swimmer. She ran track in high school, so she's very athletic.
And no surprise.
Just 25, so she's young enough. So she picks up some of the slides, and we play really well together.
That's awesome. And what a fun memory to have with your daughter, the two. That's pretty cool, Johnny.
It really is. And at this age, we can play together and have things to do, and we win championships.
That's right. A little bonding, a little championship. I love it. Well, Johnny, we're gonna go way back in time here. We know that you grew up in North Omaha in the 60s. And at that time, Omaha just had an incredible run of successful Black athletes coming out of the city. You had Hall of Famer Bob Gibson, Hall of Fame running back Gale Sayers, NBA champion Olympian Bob Boozer, pro football's first Black quarterback Marlon Briscoe. Did you know any of those guys growing up, or was there any sense of reverence or trying to follow in their footsteps when you were a young athlete yourself?
Well, I knew all those guys growing up. Also, Ron Boone. He played more games in the NBA than anybody else in history without injury. They call him the Iron Man. But Bob Gibson's brother, Josh Gibson, he was my first Little League baseball coach. And he was primarily responsible for his teaching. He was the reason why that I got drafted to the Dodgers out of high school to play baseball. A lot of people don't know that I turned that contract down because it really wasn't. I had dreams of making $100,000, and they weren't paying $100,000 in baseball at that time. So I chose to go to Nebraska, and they told me that if I put baseball together against football, and I played baseball and football, I'd have a better chance of probably getting that $100,000. And after I was there a year or so, Bob Devaney came back and told me he wanted me to give up baseball. I said, Coach, how could you possibly tell me about giving up baseball when you told me that you were going to allow me to play? I could play, but you know I'm trying to get that $100,000, Coach. He said, yeah, Johnny. She said, but if you will give up baseball willingly, you'd be the first person that we've ever endorsed for the Heisman Trophy. So I just said, put me in, Coach. It worked out.
No kidding. That's awesome.
That's great. Well, Johnny, you kind of answered my next question in a way, but I did have a question. I know this will shock a lot of the common fans.
He broke up.
Jeff's breaking up. I'll take the question here, but common fans need to brace themselves a little bit. But Johnny, is it true that Nebraska was not immediately your top choice coming out of high school? I mean, you had options to play at other schools. Is there some truth to that?
Oh, yes. I had over 50 offers. I was colleges all around the country, but I was trying to go to USC. Nebraska hadn't won a championship since Jesus was a kid. Nobody wanted to go to Nebraska. They were one of the losingest teams around. Bob Devaney, at that particular time in history, people were lobbying to get rid of Coach Bob Devaney. They didn't want Devaney as the coach anymore. And I had no interest whatsoever about going to Nebraska. I was trying my best to get to USC because I knew if I could play for USC, that I could get to the pros and I could get $100,000. And that was my motive, just to get to the pros. It wasn't until Bob came in and approached me and told me and talked to me a couple of different times, and we kind of hit it off. I remember the first time that I seen him, he came to my house, and my mother and he were talking in the living room, and I peeked around the corner, and I seen him, and I told him, I said, that guy looks like Mr. Potato Head. It's funny. But he told me that he really wanted me to come to Nebraska bad, and that he was going to recruit more Black players than any other time in history, and he was going to let them play. And if I were to come to Nebraska, I could make the difference, and we could turn that losing streak around and probably be one of the winningest teams in the nation, and he was going to let them play. And that's exactly what he did. We recruited Richie Glover, Woody Harper, Spider Acton, and the list went on and on. And we did have a good combination between black players and white players playing. We didn't have any racial discrimination or problems amongst the team. He wouldn't allow any of that. It was just about winning and trying to be the best that you could be. And if we could come together as a team, because teamwork makes your dreams work. You don't win national championships by yourself. You don't win Heisman trophies by yourself. You don't get recognition for your school by yourself. It's always in conjunction with others that you make your greatest accomplishments. And teamwork will make your dreams work. And if we played as a team, we were going to win. And we did. We worked very hard. Tom Osborne was a genius. Tom Osborne was the creator of the pro and the spread offense that a lot of teams still use today. He was actually the creator of it. And he also, I really didn't realize at that particular time that we were one of the very first few teams that were audibling when we were playing a football game. We could go right down the field without ever having to huddle. And that was unheard of at that time, not having to huddle. We could just audible, come up to the line, read the defense, call the play, and move on. And so we had an edge on people that we didn't know. And I don't think that they knew at that time. So we always had some type of an edge over winning. And we had people that were really committed to try to be the best that they could be. And our players were serious about their job, especially on punt returns and kickoffs. They were passionate about it. It wasn't just that I was running, that these guys were blocking. I have sometimes I come out with talks. I go around and I talk to different organizations, Juana's clubs, all different types of clubs. And I have a tape that I play one of the games. And we start, I point out and have audience participation where everybody count. Every time you see a block, you count. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Everybody get a block. And that was the play that I would call when I would come to the huddle, because sometimes I would call a right return and, I go left. I call left return. And then I go right, because I never knew what was really going to happen. So I just started calling everybody get a block. Ready? Break. And everybody get a block. Best they could. And we were very successful at it. And they took a personal about trying to get the job done.
That's awesome. Can you hear me? Can you guys hear me now? Are we better? Good?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Man. All right. I moved to the basement now. Sorry about the technical difficulties there.
we're not letting any technical issues stop us today. We got the jet in the house.
Yeah, this is happening. So Johnny, just to ask you a couple more questions. I kind of missed your answer there and I apologize, but you had mentioned Devaney. And I think I heard something about a Mr. Potato Head reference there when I was hopping off too. That's hilarious.
Bob Devaney. Yeah. Just think about it. Y'all know him. What do y'all think?
Yeah. it kind of feels a little blasphemous, but you know him much better than we do.
Now that you mention it though.
Yeah.
Mr. Potato Head's teams were known for being physical. So I was just curious, how grueling were these off-season workouts? Can you tell us about your transition from high school to college and how different that probably was, stepping your game up from the high school level to the college ranks?
Well, it was taking it to the next level altogether. And I was very fortunate that I did meet Bob Devaney at that particular point in time in the evolution of life, because we did have a very grueling practice. Here in Nebraska, we have different weather. I remember practicing in the summertime that it was so hot that they had cattle watches out because the cattle were dying from the heat exhaustion, and we'd be out practicing. And that very same season, they had cattle watches out that the cattle were freezing standing up, but we would still be out there practicing. It didn't make any difference. We were ready for whatever really came down. And we practiced hard, and I don't think he really overworked us, But they worked us really good, so we were able to weather any type of element that we came across, because we believed that you had to be in world-class condition, that whoever got tired first would lose the game. So we had to make sure that we did extra all the time on our own, with the team and on our own, because we didn't want to be tired first. And when I worked out every single day, I worked out with Tom Osborne after practice. We caught horseshoes and turnarounds, and we ran stadium stairs together, because I didn't really want to break for a touchdown or for a long run, and I'd be the first one that had to give up. I had to make sure that I ran those stairs till I threw up, passed out, whatever, because I didn't really want to be the one who got tired first. And I very seldom, I don't think I ever really got caught from behind. I really wasn't what you would call fast. I was quicker than I was fast. But they gave me a head start. It was on like buttered popcorn. You know?
John, did you just say T.O. would run the stairs with you?
Oh, yeah.
That's incredible.
He runs the stairs with me sometimes. He didn't run the stairs with me all the time. Okay. But he would be working out. Tom would work out himself on his own. If he didn't run those stairs with me, he would run laps while I ran stairs. He was doing something. He wasn't just standing around like Bob would do with his clipboard trying to look cute. He'd be working. Tom was a worker, and Bob was a talker, and he would romance you and get you feeling all good. He was more of a people person, but Tom was about to work.
Yeah, I even remember later in Coach Osborne's career, I remember seeing video of him running those stadium stairs. I mean, even in, I think, into the 90s. So no doubt he was a worker. But just, I guess, sticking with that about Coach Osborne, we know enough that Coach Devaney decided to hire him in 1969 at just 32 years old, Coach Osborne. So that would have been your first year, right? Freshman year, Johnny?
Yeah, my freshman year.
Okay. And
high school in 69.
Yeah. Yeah,
with the Nebraska.
So at the time, you know, was that, you know, Nebraska's coming off a couple of rough seasons with Coach Devaney. Right. At the time, you know, was that hire of Coach Osborne something that, you know, the players on the team could kind of sense that was going to be a significant change? I mean, we know enough now looking back that what a big deal that was. But at the time, what was the sentiment among the team?
Well, I had no idea. I didn't know the team. I had no idea really what to expect. The only thing I knew was what Bob Devaney had told me, and that they were losing, and what he was going to do as far as recruiting was concerned, if I were to come. I had no idea about being Tom's first year or Selmer, you know, or all the other coaches. But he had put together very quality coaches. And I think as time went on, history showed that most of our coaches could have been head coaches at other universities, but they chose to stay with Bob because Bob just had a successful concept that he was implementing, and he treated the coaches different. And as they became more successful, and we won bowl games, and they got bonuses for all the different wins and bowl games and things that we would accomplish. Bob wouldn't take anything that Bob got. He gave to the coaches. He didn't take any bonuses or any extra of this or that or the other. He always just gave it to the coaches, and that's what pretty much why they stayed with him, because they were getting more and doing more, because they all were qualified to go off on their own and to have their own separate career.
Well, it you know, the changes Coach Devaney made in 1969, coupled, I dare say, Johnny, coupled with the fact that you arriving on campus clearly worked, as the Huskers went 9-2 in 1969, and then you burst onto the scene in 1970 and helped lead the team to their first national championship. And you know, obviously that's things really got humming from there. You know, we're excited to talk to you about the Jet Award, but we want to ask you a few more questions about the old days, if you don't mind.
Oh, no, please. Yeah,
we'd love to ask you about the game of the century in particular. It was 1971, number one Nebraska versus number two Oklahoma. Nebraska coming in with the nation's number one defense, Oklahoma coming in with the nation's number one offense. Thanksgiving Day, the entire country is watching. I think every child born in Nebraska since that day has been raised on stories of that game. Well, I'm curious, what are your memories, first of all, of the days leading up to that game? I mean, I would assume there was the gravity and the weight of the situation was probably apparent to you guys on the team.
Well, we're very confident. We intended on winning. They were very confident too. They were intended on winning. You know, they hadn't lost any games either. It was definitely a showdown. Greg Pruitt and I were very good friends at that time. We had met each other at different All-American banquets in different places around the country, and became friends. So we were talking to each other about what we were going to do, and I said a few things about his mother, and he wasn't very happy about it. So we were going right around the bush all the time, but we were really good friends, and actually a lot of the Oklahoma players, we were friends and still friends to this day. But because of this being competitive, but I think what happened was on that first punt when they punted it down to me, that Greg was coming down so hard, and because I had mentioned his mother in the conversation, that he put out a little extra on there, and that kind of helped me get away. When Lyle Breamer said he's hitting, got away. it was going in, and when I hit the sideline. And it came around, Joe Blaha circled back around on the block and came and picked the last guy off my back when possibly he could have caught me from behind. Like I said, I had never really gotten caught from behind, but I had blockers too. So he took him off my back, and that set the stage for what really, really made the difference in the whole game, because had we not had that punt return, they probably would have been a few points ahead of us at the end of the game. And I caught... A lot of people don't remember, but at the very end of the game, we had a third down and 9 or 10 going into the last of the fourth quarter, where Jerry Taggy was able to scramble and get me the ball. And I kind of pulled it up off the ground and made a big catch. And that was really the biggest play of the game, not the punt return. It was that third and 10, because if we had to give the ball back to them, then they probably would have scored like they had been doing all night, back and forth. So I tell a lot of people the biggest play in the game was the third down and 10. But we just had to hold on, because they really had a very thin line between the difference in the talent between the two teams. And I think that's why we are friends today and respect each other today, because we really seriously did have the two of the greatest teams ever played that day. And we had more people watching that game that day than any other time in history. At that, the soldiers overseas, they stopped the war in order to watch the football game. And I have older people, people would tell me all the time that they watched the game from overseas. Everybody knows where they were at that time. In the game. I even know where I was too.
Yeah, and you know, we're a little younger, Johnny, so we weren't, you know, we're about a decade away from being born yet, but you know, growing up in Nebraska, especially growing up in Lincoln, that's one of those things where I think just about every one of our dads had the VHS tape of that game. And so even as kids growing up, it's almost like, you know, part of scripture. You got to watch, if you're going to be a Husker fan, you got to watch the game of the century. And so I know exactly what you're talking about with that big third down catch you had.
Did y'all listen to Lyle Breamer too? When they let you listen to Lyle all the time?
Oh yeah, that's like reciting scripture too. I mean, if you're going to be a Husker fan, you got to know the Lyle Breamer call word for word.
I've got a lot of kids. I was going to say my boys are 9 and 6. I've got them listening to Lyle Breamer. So all you know.
Right. Yeah, you got to know the man, woman, and child, and where that came from, but.
That's exactly right. Johnny, it sounds like, can you still to this day picture that punt return? Can you put yourself back there? And can you, is it clear as day to you still?
I've seen it so many times now that it's very clear. It's very clear. I can see it in my sleep. And I'm very thankful for how it really panned out. And it's just, you know, I have no idea. Things come to you as instinct. And like I said, I'm just serious glad that the conditioning, it really made the difference that we were practicing. Other people were practicing to win. We were practicing to, so we, they had it in our mind about trying to be world class. We wanted to be on another class. I mean, our guys were working out extra on our own in order to be able to be the best team. And we did a lot of different things together. Like I said, if they were all singly running stairs or lifting weights or doing whatever, they could be by themselves. I could be by myself. But we were all trying to do something so we could actually be the best that we could be. It was on our mind just to try to be the best we could be. And for Coach DeVette, I know all the players would rather slide bare ass on a razor blade than to disappoint Coach DeVette. DeVette was a people person. He could pump you up. You know, Osborne wasn't quite like that. So Osborne was a different type. But Bob DeVette would pump you up and have you going, and you really want to play for your coach and not let your coach down and not let your team down. And we played for each other. We just didn't play. It wasn't about ourselves. We played for each other, and we all put it in. And we left everything on the field every time, and we didn't make mistakes. Coach DeVette did not tolerate beating ourselves. We did not make mistakes. And when Oklahoma was giving us a time, a couple of our quarterbacks were getting beat all the time. But we had changed some things. And, you know, like I said, but we couldn't make mistakes. It was not really tolerated. And I see so many teams these days that do beat themselves. That they do make mistakes. They make many mistakes in the game. When we played that game between Oklahoma and Nebraska, the top number one and the number two team in the nation, and we had one penalty between two teams the whole game, and that was an offside penalty on us.
That's crazy. Yeah, a lot of discipline there for those two teams. I mean, it takes a lot to get to number one and number two ranked in the country, but discipline's certainly a part of it. Well, Johnny, you just mentioned the kind of the differences between Coach DeVette and Coach Osborne. I mean, we know enough, even though we're younger, we know we've heard stories over the years of Coach DeVette, and, you know, you mentioned him kind of being more of a people person, like to pump people up. And, you know, we've heard stories of him, you know, having a drink or being seen out downtown at a bar or things like that. And, you know, Tom Osborne, the other side of the spectrum. And
is that,
you know,
all?
Well, I just wondered if you had any Coach DeVette stories that are appropriate for a public forum that you could share with us, or maybe just a one liner or something that he said to you that you've never forgotten.
Well, I don't really say too much about Coach DeVette. Now he's gone. Like I said, he was a motivator and definitely a people person. He liked the players, the coaches, outside people. He enjoyed life, and he gave us a lot at the right time. And like I said, him and Coach DeVette were different night and day. Coach Osborne and he were very different, but the combination between the two is what we actually needed to go where we needed to go at that particular point in time in our history.
Well, are there, Johnny, are there any lessons from either Coach DeVette or Coach Osborne that you still carry with you to this day?
Well, like I said, it's all about winning. Winning isn't everything, but you're ready to ride paradoxically, and you got to do it now. You can't put it off till later. You got to do it now, and you got to be ready at one time that you're going to be needed to do what you need to do. So you got to be in condition. And like I said, to this day, it raises my mind that whoever gets tired first loses. Fatigue makes cowards of us all. Fatigue. And if you get tired first, you lose. So you don't want to be, you know, like I said, I play pickleball all the time. I don't want to ever be tireder than my opponent. I'm going to play harder, but I'm not going to be tireder because I'm going to be in a little bit better condition all the time. And everything I do, I try to do it in a world-class fashion. You never get a second chance to make that first impression. You got to do things now. And you are what you think about most of the time. So you got to check yourself on what you're thinking, because we haven't used nearly all the talent that we're capable of having and to express. We're always capable of doing more. I get up in the morning, early in the morning, to start my day because I can't wait. If people have all the good things happening to them every morning, they get up and go out to early too. I got things to look forward to because we're creating. I believe that we're co-creators, that there's so many things that we're capable of doing, but we got to get out there and do it. And people that you're trying to get to do things, they don't do what you say. They do what they see you doing. So you have to be doing and you have to be thinking, because things come to you as you believe. You believe you can, or if you believe you can't. Wherever you believe, you're probably going to be right. So control your thinking. It really is the first step of wherever you can do it. Wherever you can think about, you can do and you can be. We can do it all, y'all. We're not even trying half the time. Too many people are sleeping. You don't want to get up early in the morning. You really get started on your days. You got to stay. I was up at 2 o'clock last night working on a talk I got to give Friday. I got to speak to people that bought it today. It's whatever is necessary to win. I mean, from the time that we're 1 until we're 70, the average life expectancy of people today are only 70 years. 70 years is only 840 months. How long does it take you to spend 840 of anything? You know, by the time that you're 30, you've used up 360 months of your best time, your prime time, that time that you could burn that candle on both ends. You know, that's not 360 months to 30. That leaves you 480 months. For the rest of your life, 480 months, that's nothing. 25,200 days or tries, and it's over. You better get the ass up. Get busy. And you can make history. And history is his story. What is your story? What do you want the story to be? What do you want to tell your kids you want their story to be? It's wherever you think it is. But once you think it, be careful what you're thinking, because then you've got to do it. But once you send it out there, the universe takes it. It takes it and it continues it on and on. So if you're thinking bad things, then bad things are going to happen. But if you're thinking good things and you feed them and you work on them, they are truly going to happen too. You can be whatever it is you want to be, but you have to do it now, because time is always running out.
Awesome. Woo! Love that, Johnny.
Wise words to live. I don't know. Damn it, Johnny, you got me wanting to run through a wall right now. that's awesome. Great. That's for all the listeners out there. That's something to get you. If there's something to get you out of bed in the morning, that right there, listen to that clip right there. Yeah.
Get your ass out of bed and make it happen. It's Johnny Rogers.
Damn right. Johnny, I'd be remiss if we didn't ask you a little bit about the Heisman Trophy. As common fans here, we do ask the hard hitting questions. So I'm going to put you on the spot here.
Okay.
How often do people ask you to do the Heisman pose, and how annoyed do you get by that?
I offer to do the Heisman pose with almost everybody that takes a picture with me, because yes. I know how special it is for them. Yep. So I want them to have something special all the time that they can look at and they can see and they can show around. And so I do the Heisman pose almost every single time that someone wants to take a picture. I have them do the Heisman pose as well.
I so love
they
it.
Can have they can have what they want, and they can have a Heisman pose picture, something that others would like to have that they have over them, and they can show themselves. And it's mean the Heisman pose is the pose for simply the best. You know, this is what simply the best do. You know, and they can be the best too at whatever it is that they want to do, wherever form of life that they're dealing with, they want to be the best too, and they have a Heisman trophy. Attitude, and you can have Heisman Trophy results.
Awesome. I know you're not on camera right now, obviously, but can you just humor us and tell us that you're doing the Heisman pose right now for the common fans?
Well, I could do it right now, yeah. I can still get up on either leg, you know?
Nice.
You got to lift your leg and put your arm up. It's incredible how many people that are younger than me don't have that good of balance.
That's right.
follow-up question, Heisman related, but you know, with the ceremony being on TV, it's a huge deal and lots of eyeballs on that. And so as a young man growing up, it was always something that I watched on ESPN or whatever network it was on at the time. And so you see past winners that come to the ceremony and show up there. What's it like being part of that family? Have you developed any relationship with other Heisman winners because of that? Do you still get to go? Do you go to the ceremony at all anymore? Or how's that working for you?
I caught COVID a couple years ago, I think it was.
Oh,
and that's the only time that and I still was trying to get there then, but that's the only time since I won the Heisman that I didn't go back for the Heisman. I've been back every single year. I go back. And Archie Griffin and I, we sit next to each other. You know, we have people that we gather up in our end. I remember we were on the right end, down where all the young people were. Now we're on the other end, down where all the old people are. So it's been going on a long time, but I've never missed a Heisman Trophy dinner. That's just part of my regiment for the respect that I have for, you know, the people that put it on and the people that have won it. And these are some of the best athletes in the history of the world. And I don't know them all personally, but I want them to see that I represent my generation of people, that we take it serious so we can have more people that come consistently to take it more serious, because there's a lot of people that don't participate, but we do manage to get at least 20-some-odd people at each banquet each year that I've been for my entire life.
Awesome. What kind of food they serving at those dinners? We're talking filet mignon? What are we talking here? Curious.
Well, mostly, you know, steak. You know, you got to have big time. You know, steak and pretty good food. Mostly steak. People like, they figure if you're doing good, you got a steak, but you have choices. You could probably have a different fish or something too, but they feed you pretty good. The party's good. It's a nice 3 or 4 days that we have. We enjoy the time, the photographs, the history. And like you said, it only comes, you can't repeat it. So if you miss it, you really miss something that's special. And it's really special. It gets better every year as they get more creative on it. And so we just hope more people participate. And now that we show it all around, more people are looking at it, enjoying it, and to let the kids see so their imaginations can go.
Yeah.
Because if you can see it, you can be it.
One last question, and I'm sure you've listened to all of our podcast episodes. You can see me right now. And TJ, I'll tell you this, Matt will tell you this. I'm a Husker fan from living in the city of Lincoln, but I grew up as in a Notre Dame house. So I've kind of got allegiances to both sides of these teams, and I'm wearing a Notre Dame hoodie right now. If you can see it.
That's great. They're one of my favorite teams too. I had four touchdowns and threw one on them.
You beat me to it. I mean, you scored in almost every way possible in that Orange Bowl game. So I guess my only question was going to be, why did you have to do my Irish dirty like that? But you already answered it. So thanks.
It was Coach Devaney's fault. It was Coach Devaney with his last game. He was leaving and we wanted him to go out with a bang. So we had to make it special. We had lost a couple games that year. We hadn't lost until that year at all, in my history. So we had to go out in the bang. So, like you said, you never get a second chance to make that first impression. And that was our last game. So we wanted to make sure that we had him go out with the game that people would remember.
Awesome.
And those Irish.
Bear Bryant, I can't believe that they kept kicking it to me and stuff.
Arrogance, just pure arrogance.
Bear Bryant, right? He said he wasn't going to do it, but he did it too.
Well, Johnny, the Jet Award Gala is coming up next month. I'd love to hear from you. You know, we know about the Jet Award and we've talked to Michael about it before, but would kind of love to hear from you kind of the history of the award, because I know you were at the center of that. How was the award born, or how did it come about in the first place?
Well, actually, it was just a premonition from God, because I was just sitting around one day and I was just thinking about, you know, the punt return and the kickoff guy, and it just clicked on me that was the only award in college position in college football that they didn't have an award for. Out of all they got, they had an award for the best center, had awards for the best running back, the best quarterback, but they didn't have an award for punt return and kickoff guys. And they run 100-yard touchdowns. These are some of the baddest men on the planet. That's what we call them, the baddest men on the planet. Because if you can run a 100-yard touchdown, you're a bad man.
Yes, and, you are.
But they didn't have an award for it. So I got together with a couple of my friends, Denny Drake and William Reed, and we came over to Concept, and it was Anthony's Steakhouse we gave our first dinner at, and we had about 200 people that showed up, and a couple weeks before that, we didn't have enough money to even get it on. It was just right at the very end, we were able to pull it off, and it was a few hundred people, and it turned out. This past year, we had over 1,000 people that we had. We sell tickets and tables for from $2,500 to $25,000, and over 1,000 people showed up this at Baxter Arena. And this year, with the addition of Larry the Cable Guy, that's going to be there for the Jet Award after party, the award and the after party. We're thinking that we possibly have an opportunity to get 3,000 people there, because my whole deal is that, like I said, I do tables for like 2,500, 25,000. I was pushing out a lot of the community because they can't afford that. But with the balcony seats all there that we can have people to come, that they don't have to be part of the meal, they can be part of the program for $39 and to come see the Jet Award and Larry the Cable Guy, I think we're going to really be able to have the biggest banquet we've ever had. Because last year it showed that people really have an interest and they want to come be part of our show as well.
That's really so. Any common fan can get a ticket. Are there still tickets available?
$39. $39. You can see the Jet Award and Larry the Cable Guy, and there are still tickets that are available for those seats to be part of that program. And the after party. Larry the Cable Guy is one of the funniest guys in the world. And I just can't imagine that people wouldn't come just to see Larry for $39. Because where can you get an opportunity to see Larry for $39?
No kidding. That's a hell of a deal. So, can people go to thejetaward.com and get tickets for that?
You can go to thejetaward.com and get tickets for that. Yes, they can. And we have keynote speaker Danny Woodhead. He's going to be our keynote speaker. He's from Chadron State. And everybody knows Danny. He's like the two-time Harlan Hill Trophy winner, which is the Division II Heisman Trophy. Our Jet Award winner is Zachariah Branch. He's a wide receiver from Southern California, USC. He got more moves than Allied Van Lines. More moves than Carter got peeled. He'd make your knees squeeze and your liver quiver, put more glide in your stride and more dip in your hip. And then we got legacy winner DeJuan Gross. He's played with the Huskers. And DeJuan, he's got more yards and catches and different things than I do. Except the only thing is he played 4 years and I only played three. So, but he has more. And he actually happens to be my nephew as well. He married one of my nieces.
Oh wow! Very cool.
So the Jet Award's going to be on April 4th. At the Baxter Arena, and we're going to have Larry the Cable Guy is going to end it up. We have an all-star cast. James Shaq Harris. James is going to come back and to present the Marlon Briscoe Award that we have going on. And we're giving awards and recognition to pretty much a lot of people in our community about different things. It's going to be a big, big night.
That sounds awesome. So April 4th, Thursday, April 4th, Baxter Arena. $39, hell of a deal. You can get tickets at thejetaward.com.
Yeah, we sold out. All of our tables are pretty much sold out. But we do have the $39 tickets that are available. So I would say you get you a dozen tickets and then take a bunch of kids and different people, and you'll have the experience of their life.
That sounds great.
Get your tickets, common fans, thejetaward.com. Check it out.
They're not common fans. They're fans too. They're just late.
We're the common fans, Johnny.
Yeah, we're all common fans. Hey, Johnny, we know that Jet Award Foundation does more than just, you know, give awards away at this dinner, although that sounds like an amazing experience this year. I'm sure it is every year. But can you tell us a little bit more about the philanthropic work and scholarship work done by the foundation in addition to giving out that award?
Yes, I can. Well, you know, it comes around where I did, I came from a trade school. Tech High was a trade school. It was we had the second largest school in the history of, in Nebraska, in history, and it was a trade school. And so they closed down Tech High because they thought more kids would be better off going to get a 4-year degree. And so they closed it down. So, but now at this time in history, we got an opportunity to, get more people going on to the trades. And in our 4-county area here, MCC jobs associated with the programs of study, the median wage is about $50,000 right now that the people get are going into the trades. So there's more opportunities out there right now for people in the trades than there's ever been. And we got about 100 different careers that they can have by going to Metro Community College. And fortunately, with the federal government, just awarded us a $2 million grant to help give scholarships with conjunction Metro Community College. And Metro matches all the money that we put in, they match it. So we have a very great opportunity for our community right now for the opportunities for young people, old people, all different people to come into the trade. We've given scholarships to people from 18 to 60. And the people who want to come back for second chances, a lot of people to enhance their career. Like I said, our median income is like $50,000 starting off.
That's awesome, Johnny. I mean, that's so cool that you do something like that. That's not just, you know, to benefit athletes and athletics, but you're doing something that there, I think, that is really helping the community. So that's awesome to hear that you're doing that.
Well, since 2017, I think Metro came on to do that. We've had over 300 graduates in the skilled trades, technical science, health professionals, business, information technology, community and human services, creative arts and design. And the thing that I'm really most proud of is that we have graduates and give us scholarships for people of all different races. Everybody is involved. We're really servicing our whole community in some way, and somehow they all are coming and taking the interest in trying to take themselves to another level. And that's what we want, because if they don't come do it, the other kids don't do it until they see their parents do it. A lot of times, these non-traditional students, their parents, and because their kids see their parents going to school, now they're going to want to go to school too, but before they weren't going. That's why we have problems, because the parents have been some of the biggest problems that we have in our communities, because they show the example for the kids. Now that more parents are going back trying to get a second chance, then we have more young people trying to come in and get those first chance.
That's absolutely incredible, Johnny. Yeah. And over 300 students now graduated through support from the scholarships. It sounds like a no-brainer to me, guys. Tickets are still available, $39. Not only do you recognize the bad dudes who can bring a kickback 100 yards for a touchdown, but also go to support these scholarships to support education in the trades at Metro Community College for people of all ages and all races from the community. Such impactful work, Johnny. So impressive. Really cool to hear. I think we're close to wrap up time here. Johnny, do you have anything else you want to share about the JET Award or the event? It sounds like it's just going to be an incredible event.
We have people returning to get an education. And I like people that are returning, from returns and kickoff. And in all, I guess we just love great returns.
We love great returns. That's right.
That's fantastic. Well, Johnny, we can't thank you enough for joining the Common Fans today. It's just been absolutely a delight to chat with you. I think all Husker fans are going to enjoy this conversation. So thanks so much for joining us. Really enjoyed it.
I appreciate you guys. I didn't really realize you guys were in Lincoln. Are from Lincoln. I remember I went back to Lincoln after I went back to Lincoln to get my degree after being gone for a long time. And I remember all the kids would say, Mr. Rogers, what are you going to be when you graduate? What are you going to be when you graduate? And I always tell them, 50. So I went back and I promised my children that I was going to get a degree. And I was pushing them to get master's degrees. And, they didn't really see the interest of everybody having to go to college. But right now, I'm really glad to say that I have three of my daughters. They have master's degrees. My son, Terry, he graduated from there and had a career with Eli Lilly for the last 50 years. And my other two sons are in the trade. But we believe my sister, Diane, she worked with Metro Community College for almost 40 years. And so we just truly believe that education is not part of your life. Education is life itself. Everybody got to get one or two degrees. We just, wherever it is, there's always an opportunity. I don't care how good you are. I don't care how great you might think you are. We always can do that.
That's absolutely right, Johnny. A quote from my dad's ringing in my head right now. He always would say that we're all in the biggest room in the world, and it's the room for improvement.
That's right. We got it. I don't care how good. You know you get better. I have people that you say, I think I'm doing good. I was talking to my stepson yesterday, and he's running the 40 in 4.4. And he's telling me how good he's got going in 4.4. I said, well, what? My other son, he ran 4.2. He's 4.4. You better get your ass back out there. You got a long way to go, buddy.
Yeah,
and they probably can, because I mean, really, people don't understand. We say it all the time, but you are what you think. Just think you can, and you can't. Just think you can, and you can. And wherever you're at, you can do better all the time, every single time, and whatever it is. We're gonna figure out a little bit more, a little tweak here, a little tweak there, and we're gonna make everything a little bit better than we were before we start thinking on it deeply. The more we think on it, the better and easier it gets for us. It's just repetition.
Words to live by from Johnny the Jet Rogers. Yeah. I think all of us.
I used to be the Jet, but now I'm just a prop plane. I'm still flying.
Now you'll still always flying. You'll always be Johnny the Jet to us, Johnny. Well, thank you so much for joining us,
fellas.
Johnny Rogers, ladies and gentlemen. As always, common fans, GBR for life. We'll be right back.